Comcast Business helps retailers become seamlessly restocking, frictionless paying favorite shopping destinations. It's how nationwide restaurants become touchscreen ordering, quick-serving eateries, and how hospitals become the patient-scanning, data-managing healthcare facilities that we all depend on. With leading networking and connectivity, advanced cybersecurity, and expert partnership, Comcast Business is powering the engine of modern business. Powering possibilities. Restrictions apply.
Some things are just better together. Movies and popcorn, gaming and friends, Breezeline Internet and mobile. Bundle and save with fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month, and you'll get a free mobile line for a year. It's a match made in savings. Visit Breezeline.com today.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Matter Private Network.
On News Talk.
Now, the book I have in front of me poses a question to me. I've got to ask myself, am I oppressed or am I one of the oppressors? Or, as an Irish person, do I get a free pass? The book is called We the Oppressors, subtitled How Societies Are Designed to Support the Status of Those in Power at the Destructive Expense of Those Without It. Dr. Jack Davey, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me, Pat.
Now, it's a fascinating book on so many levels, and I'm going to go to the end of the book, if you don't mind. This is your conclusion, American Carnage, and you say, when I first wrote the outline for these chapters in early 2020, I was hoping that we'd see a watershed in the creeping oppression which has gradually emerged within democratic governments all over the world. You talk about the unabashed state control continuing in China, an established authoritarian kleptocracy in Russia, theocracy thriving in Iran, and the privilege defending and increasing populism of the British government, ironically matched even as Britain distanced itself from them by some of its European neighbours. But there was one place that could turn the tide, that was America. What a disappointment. It hasn't happened.
Yes, I think I was always a bit optimistic there. The interesting point is that we're still in that watershed. We're still, there's still a chance that we can, as societies, both in America and in Europe, we can turn that back, and we can think about our place in the world and what we do and how that affects our neighbours and our friends and other countries, and start to behave a bit more responsibly. But yes, you're right. Recent signs haven't been fantastic.
Now, Donald Trump, you quote him in taking his oath of office. He said he was going to bring about the end of what he called American carnage. And he said, Americans want great schools for their children, safe neighborhoods for their families, and good jobs for themselves. These are just unreasonable demands of righteous people and a righteous public. But for too many of our citizens, a different reality exists. Now, you also describe him as a repeatedly bankrupt, corrupt property mogul, a credibly accused rapist and serial liar. There's the contradiction of America.
Yes, certainly. And the fascinating thing about that is the difference between rhetoric and action, that Donald Trump obviously knows what it is that people want. He understands what it is that people are hoping for, and he's willing to say all the right things. But of course, when in office, he did absolutely nothing to further that, and in fact worsened divisions and worsened the exploitation inherent to that system.
So one presumes somebody else wrote the speech.
I think that's a good bet, yes.
Yeah. Now, bring us back to your basic thesis that some of the people who would imagine themselves to be very good people doing all the right things are in fact buttressing a system which oppresses, perhaps even without realizing they are the oppressors, possibly because of a colonial history.
Yes, absolutely. I don't want to stand here and say that you're all bad people. That's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is that there are bad people out there who will exploit systems to cause harm, and that all of us, including myself, and are part of complex systems of economics and religion and society that are designed in such a way that some people will suffer and some people will benefit, and that it without fully comprehending it, in many cases we participate in those systems in ways that continue them and that continue that harm onto some people at the expense of others. sorry, the benefit for some people at the expense of others. And that it's incumbent on us as informed, educated citizens to understand how those systems work and look at ways that we can mitigate the harm they cause.
Mm. Now, Britain, a well-known colonial power, in what ways does it, if you like, deny what it did in terms of the way it lives in the modern era?
Well, I have a quote in the book, slightly old now, from around the time of the Brexit referendum, of the then, I think it was the defence minister, saying that Britain is the only country in Europe that doesn't have a reason to be ashamed of its 20th century history. There's a huge reservoir of denial about British history and what Britain has done in the world over the last few centuries, and even, you know, within living memory, in Britain. There's a this fascination with saying, you know, we're a good country and we're not like those bad countries who did bad things like the Germans, and that we have nothing to be ashamed of in our history. And that manifests in, you know, political campaigns around statues and around wokeism and anti-wokeism, that denies responsibility for so many of the problems in the world lying at the door of British colonialism.
There is also inherent in all of the arguments throughout the book a kind of a hierarchy of cultural worth. But you make the point very early on that we're all people, and we all, as individuals, no matter where we're born, where we come from, where we come from, what kind of milieu we grew up in, that we are all equal, of equal value. But that's not how those in power see it.
No, it's incredibly easy to compartmentalize suffering elsewhere in the world and think, well, they're not like us and they don't feel the same way as us. And it's just completely untrue. Everybody out there in the whole world has the same emotions that you do, the same experiences that you do, the same desires and hopes and dreams that you do. And yet great many people live in systems that will forever deny them that. And that we need to recognize that and not dismiss it and not try and mitigate the harm that's caused there, but think, actually, this is happening and that we can collectively do something about it. I don't want to give the impression that there's a kind of hierarchy, that there should be a hierarchy of value. I think there is one in the world, driven by power and wealth. But it's very important that we recognize that other people have opinions and beliefs and ideas, and that those beliefs and ideas and opinions are rooted in the same logic and the same hope that ours are, and that, you know, as long as they're not hurting people actively, we should give them respect. And where they are hurting people actively, we should look at why that is and how that can be mitigated.
The idea that some people are primitive because, for example, I was reading years ago about South Africa, and there was an indigenous people there around Cape Town, and they didn't actually much need to work, as we would understand it, because the land was so abundant and the seas around Cape Town were so abundant. They didn't have to buy tellies or cars or books or anything else. So then along comes, I think, the first crowd to arrive were the Dutch, but the Brits were not long after.
Yeah.
And the idea was these are some sort of inferior people because they don't have agriculture and they don't have this, that and the other. But quite frankly, they didn't need it.
No, this is absolutely correct and really, really important. There is still this notion, very, very common, commonly held, that that there is some kind of hierarchy of civilization, a hierarchy of technology. And this is a deliberate thing that was done in the 18th and 19th centuries in colonial capitals to delegitimize the very humanity of the people that were being colonized, and to say, you know, these are Stone Age people, these are primitive people, they're not like us, they don't have the same kind of humanity as us, and therefore we're justified in going in, enslaving them, exploiting their resources, and colonizing them. And this is still very prevalent, but it's explicitly an imperial project, it's explicitly a racist project. And it's important to understand that technology is relative, not absolute. It's not not one great pyramid with you know, white bearded Victorian men at the top, which is how it was presented in the 19th century. That actually it's about adapting to your environment and adapting to your needs. And once you start to look at things like that, you can realize that actually the world is a much more complex and much more even place than that kind of hierarchy of value would make.
And
it
when
seem.
you think of the benefits that finally modern medicine is discovering in herbal medicine, in Chinese medicine, and so on, which would have been dismissed, you know, in the scientific revolution, as it were, one of the fundamental contradictions in the United States, of course, is the oppression of the Native Americans, so-called Indians. And you have a chapter in the book of Native Americans and the Hollywood genocide.
Yeah.
But those people had to be dehumanized completely in order, and still are in many ways, because if you take people's rights, the rights to the land mass, that is the United States of America and Canada, belongs to those people.
Absolutely. And if you watch classic Westerns, John Wayne Westerns, that sort of thing, what you're watching is a deliberate effort in American society in that time to completely dehumanize and delegitimize Native Americans and to create a narrative that says that they deserve to lose their land, they deserve to be overrun because they're not as human as us. They're more savage, they're more primitive. Mm-hmm. And that by coming in and civilizing, in inverted commas, their societies, we're actually, you know, clearing the land of this unnecessary savagery and turning it into something more civilized. Yeah. And the ongoing actions of Hollywood in portraying that is a continuation of the physical genocide that was enacted in the 19th century.
And the idea that these people are uncivilized, they can't speak English.
Right, exactly.
Instead of saying to the colonizer, hang on a second, you don't speak our language. How uncivilized of you. There's one chapter which is fascinating because it's all about the ruling class in Britain and how many of them came from the elite schools, the fee-paying schools, and the elite universities.
Yeah, absolutely. The ruling class in Britain is still very much in place and still very strong. Sort of 55 British prime ministers have been to private schools, and about half of those went to Eton. There's this elite group who passed down power and wealth and opportunity through the generations and hoard it to themselves. And we're seeing this play out kind of right now in the leadership election in Britain, where there's this big debate about who is more privileged than who and who is better, more in touch with who, while retaining policies that preserve power to a very small elite, while everybody else is going through a cost of living crisis and struggling in the aftermath of the pandemic and the effects of Brexit.
There's one person in that chapter who fascinates us as Irish people, and that's Brendan Bracken.
Yes.
What an extraordinary man. He could have sold sand to the Arabs or ice to the Inuit.
It's a remarkable example of how privilege operates. A man who born to a Irish Republican working class family, moved to Australia, and then at age 19 effectively lied his way into a scholarship at a private school and used the connections and networks that he was able to tap into, as well as the learning how the British establishment works in his time at that private school, to build a career first as a newspaper man and then as a political advisor and eventually Winston Churchill's right-hand man during the Second World War. And it's a good example of how the private school system in Britain maintains an educational advantage. Yeah, but if you can tap into it, you have access to all of these things you wouldn't have otherwise.
It's the passport to privilege and power. Finally, I should ask you this question. You may not want to or cannot answer it, but do we as Irish, having been colonized rather than being the colonizers, do we get a free pass?
I would say, without wishing to be too controversial, that nobody gets a free pass. It's incumbent on all of us, wherever we live, and particularly if we're living in affluent Europe, comparative with other parts of the world, to examine our actions and how we behave. Now, of course, Ireland, you know, doesn't have the imperial history of Britain to reflect on in that way. But it's so there are, you know, there are strong differences there. But I think it's a responsibility that everybody who operates in this system, and we all do, has to use the resources at hand to examine those systems and to make sure that they're doing everything they can to not further the harm that they can cause.
The book is called We the Oppressors. It's published by Quercus, and its author, Dr. Jack Davey. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
Some things are just better together. Movies and popcorn, gaming and friends, Breezeline internet and mobile. Bundle and save with fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month, and you'll get a free mobile line for a year. It's a match made in savings. Visit breezeline.com today.